Hello, hello, hello.
Welcome to the S-Rank Supports podcast.
Supports. Plural.
Because we added that on.
We did.
You added
more that. Than 5 minutes ago.
Less than 5 minutes ago. To the S-Rank Supports podcast. My name is Cy Anderson.
And I'm Gabriel Preem.
And we are just a couple of goobers who want to talk about video games.
Goofballs.
We're gonna talk about title screens.
Title screens. We thought that was a good place to start.
Yeah, you can give yourself credit for that one.
I'm digging my own grave because I may not know where that takes me, but I got some stuff in mind. Thinking title screens. Ironically, also a great place to start because that's where you start in a game. Profound. Full circle. There's an allegorical component to this.
This is all planned ahead of time.
You're
reading from a script right now.
And seriously, the mental script. It's just visual. Anyway.
So then what are some of your... Where do you want to start? What are some of your favorites when you think of title screens in games? What is the first thing you think of? Is it one of your favorite games? Is it something... from earlier in your childhood that you first played? What made you think of the topic in general?
That was a really good question because we talked about this before recording and I had answers, but that question sparked even more answers with an example from my childhood, which is ironically like one of the reasons I think I'm pursuing composition for games and film in general is Uncharted. You haven't played any of the Uncharted?
I have Uncharted 4. Got it with my PlayStation, like everybody else on the planet, because I think it was
Uncharted
a 4, game.
Yeah, right? Because that was one of their debut titles when PlayStation 4 came out.
Well, so what, the first one or
the third one?
Okay,
the third one. Because when I did I tell you the anecdote of when my PlayStation 3 got fried?
Yes.
Short story is due to a lack of ventilation where my family kept our PlayStation 3. I left it on because I was a kid. I was stupid. And it got fried over the course of a week because it was on for a week straight. Absolutely toasted the thing. It was
just
crazy.
Like catch on fire.
Seriously. But, it could have been terrible. But that was an early model of the PlayStation 3 that was backwards compatible. Mm-hmm. And then that was a separate anecdote we had about trading in PlayStation 2 games.
Right.
But won't get into that. When we got our new PlayStation 3... the title that it was bundled with was Uncharted 3, Drake's Deception.
Right.
And that immediately became one of my favorite games. I think for me, at the time, I was like, 12, I think, when I played it, sometime in middle school. And I was baffled by kind of how over the top it was. And I've had friends who've also played Uncharted and never got into it because of how... almost like borderline fantastical it was. But this became one of my favorite games because of the cinematic elements that I thought just had never really been done well in games before. It felt like I was really playing a movie. And I thought that was kind of, for me personally, that was groundbreaking. And so I became super invested in this title. And then when you beat the game, credits roll and all of that, you return to the title screen, and I have a vivid recollection of sitting in front of the title screen and just listening to the title screen music for Uncharted 3 just play for like 20 minutes because I was so stunned by where the game went and the journey that I had. I needed like a second to like process all of it. So I was sitting there listening. It's they played Drake's, I think it's called Drake's Theme 3.0 is what's played over the title screen. And it's just literally the title card and then a desert of sand with an AK-47 like buried halfway into the sand on like the right side of the screen. And you just watch the sand kind of roll across the screen because that game is like, it's known for its desert scene when Drake gets like stranded and the music itself, I think was something about it really, it stuck with me. You know, I go back to listen to it every now and then. And I honestly don't think there's anything like too profound. It's highly melodic writing and specifically the brass. Mm-hmm. And then there's some like tribal drums in the background, like Taiko style. And that's really the entire composition.
Okay.
But it stuck with me. And I think that was the point that I kind of want to make with the importance of what you put.
Well, that was surprising to hear you say that, because so it wasn't at the start of the game that you felt an attachment to it. It
was
when you
turned
to it afterwards.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, that's cool. I didn't even think about it going there. Was it like one of those things where the title screen is different at the end of the game compared to the beginning, or no?
Okay. No, it was the exact same.
So it's just like that, the moment of coming to the end of such a cinematic story, and kind of, I feel like I kind of have the same effect if I like go to the theater and see a really good movie, and it's like one of those things I can't even get up to leave during the credits.
Right.
I feel like it's what everyone does, but it's like one of those moments where I just like have to spend the time during the credits to like process.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
And I've learned recently that like even in movies, I like sitting sort of out of respect for everyone who made the experience, especially if I like the movie, but like I need to sit there and like get through at least half the credits, even the ones that it's just white text scrolling on black. And this gets away from games a little bit, but I think it's still a very valid thing to talk about because it's very music related. But when you, what people decide to put in credits in films or games is very incredibly intentional. And we talk about that in like the scoring department as well. A lot of composers where they make like more than 50% of their paycheck is in what they call the main theme for a film and the credits. Because the credits is literally nothing but your music being played over text.
Yeah.
And it's what's keeping things interesting, and it's what's kind of contextualizing the experience. And so the credit music and the main theme are like the two most profitable musical cues that a film composer can write when they're doing their cue sheets.
And does that have nothing to do with like audiences listening to it after the fact? It's purely because of the importance of including it and making those moments in the film or game important?
I think it's a combination of both. Yeah. Cause they know that the audience will be there at least for a little bit.
Yeah.
And a lot of movies will obviously just song drop something, you know, take like an ABBA song and be like, you know, there's your first credit song.
Right.
And if you stay for after that portion of Dancing Queen, then the composer's track.
Yeah. They start reusing music.
But that credit music is never like copy and paste. It's often like, something where the composer themselves, they write an entirely new track based on themes that they like cultivated over the course of the film, which I find very, very fascinating. But another anecdote related to this is even when it's a song drop, have you seen the movie, Parasite?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And I
fantastic
love it.
Movie.
Yeah. Okay.
At the very end of it, the last song they play is, it's a pop song. It's called like, a glass of soju.
Okay.
I think is one of the titles.
I've seen it.
And the alternative title to that pop song, which is really just a song drop for this movie, is like 400 something years. You can probably look it up real quick. Glass of Soju. I forget who the artist is.
Do I know how to spell soju?
Don't let me down. Parasite credit song or something like that. Yeah, but the alternative title for this song is like a duration.
Soju Hanjang.
It's
Soju Hanjang.
And it's also called like 400 something years, which is the amount of time that I think it would take the main character, like the protagonist, like the son and the family that it follows. Because the film ends with, for those that don't know or haven't watched Parasite, I guess there are minor spoilers alert, but it's a whole class critique on kind of the like socioeconomic situation in like Korea. And the film ends with the son of the family having this kind of fantasy or dream situation where he goes and buys the house that they were kind of feeding off of. And the alternative name for like, I think this song was some like 400 years or something like that. And that was the amount of time it would take for that son to make enough money to actually buy that house given the average like wage of like an average Korean citizen.
Interesting.
And okay. Basically it was reaffirming that you know, it's not possible.
Right.
So I find it very fascinating in general that you can make very cool creative statements.
Yeah.
Just with like music or lyrics after the thought, doesn't need to be during the film.
Yeah. Well, okay. So that's interesting, because I feel like I always think of, you know, circling back to the idea of title screens, I feel like I always think of it in terms of setting the scene for something that's going to happen, mm-hmm. or like you said, kind of, it's kind of where you return to. It's kind of like the home base for not just like the tone of the story, but I feel like almost the player experience, because every time you boot up the game,
right,
you're going to be at the title screen every time.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like, but then that's interesting. So what you're kind of saying, talking about like the credits and the ending of a story, like Parasite, for example, is it's actually something that can be used to further extend the meaning of a story,
right,
or suggest more about where it could go. Is that kind of what you're
saying?
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's
cool. And you brushed upon something we've been wanting to hold out on,
right,
which is a whole long episode on Final Fantasy 16.
Right.
But when you mentioned kind of consistently coming back to title screen music, mm-hmm. there's also the, what is it called? The land of icons. Is that the,
I think that's right.
That's the track from Final Fantasy 16.
Right.
Yeah. Land of icons. Soken. That's Soken and Uematsu. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Write that track. And yeah. you want to briefly explain your experience regarding constantly being forced in this case to revisit that track.
You know, it's one of those things that you think you'd grow to love, but instead of growing to love it, it's like instead the thing itself grows arms and starts punching you every time you look at it.
Or hear it, in this case.
So, yeah. See, that's the thing, is because I told you just earlier today that I've been listening to just this album that, mm-hmm. That Square Enix had released of, they call it Final Fantasy 16 Prelude, for the original soundtrack. It's just those five tracks, because that's all I have to listen to. And it's funny, because for all of these tracks, but with the title track as well, I feel like it's grown on me a little bit, but... Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we talked about just this title track specifically a little bit. I don't know what it is about it that is so obnoxious.
It's horrible.
I guess it was a lesson in the fact that it is possible to have a title track, a title screen theme. I don't want to say done poorly, but there's something about it that is...
Compositionally, I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with the track.
But right.
You pointed this out before, it doesn't show up. And just the title screen.
Well, yeah, it shows up. Just in the title screen. It shows up on the map theme. And then also for people that have a PlayStation 5, and I think the PlayStation 4 maybe did this too. I don't remember. I don't think so.
I think it did, but you have to click down into it.
Oh,
it doesn't
okay.
do it automatically. You have to go to the application and like hit the down button
right.
to see the game details, and that's when it pulls up the background
okay.
and switches the audio.
Yeah, well, so when you go to the PlayStation 5 home menu and you hover over the game, the app icon, no pun intended, it starts also playing that track. And I think every game has it differently. It's not always the title screen. People, it's set to whatever the developers want it set to, I guess.
But I would presume so, but now that you bring it up, I feel like I try to pay attention to it, but I sometimes don't even notice if it's the same thing. I think the last example was the other track I got so sick of was, I think, the title track for Forspoken.
Okay.
And I think the loading music or the home PlayStation home menu music for that application is the same as the title screen. And I remember having a similar experience with that track as I did with Land of Icons, of getting incredibly
yeah.
sick of it. Because it was also a solo female vocalist
okay.
doing the exact... Land of Icons doesn't have words in it, right?
And I don't vocal believe track. So. The high vocal line.
Forspoken was the exact same thing.
Okay.
It was just one female vocalist going...
Ah,
ah, ah.
You don't dig
and
that?
I got the whole thing memorized. And I haven't touched that game in like a year. It's terrible. It's horrible.
Well, I feel like the experience... this is the thing. Is it's not even... It's not even just my experience with the Land of Icons track, because the way it's built into the interface of the game and also the PlayStation 5, you're forced to hear it. We have the exact same experience,
yeah,
right?
So
you, let's say you're in the game and you open up the map. You don't even have to open up the map. Let's say you look at the map. You open up the map in the game. The track starts playing. You hear the first 10 seconds of the track or less. You close the map, it stops playing. You want to save the game, so you go to the menu, click the save button, go to the home page of the PlayStation 5, which means you're then hovering over the app icon,
right,
so it starts playing again, and then you click on the PlayStation options menu to close the game, which then when you do that and the game closes, it like reboots it and the track starts again. So like every single time you...
Over the course of like a minute, you've heard the first 10 seconds like five times.
Well, not just that, but the fact that the game is like 50 hours or so long.
Yeah.
So how many times are, unless you sat down and played the entire game in one sitting, you were hearing it many times. And that's the thing is like you said, compositionally, I think it's fine.
It's fine.
In fact, I actually think it does a good job of like, it doesn't get you into any particular like mood or expectation of what's going to happen. It kind of sets you up for like mysterious. I don't want to say dark because the track isn't dark, but there's a sense of drama to it. Yeah, and like in sort of like ambiguous quality.
Right.
About to happen.
Yeah, I think that comes from mainly probably the harmonies.
Yeah,
it's a slightly dark, but just kind of a blank canvas.
Yeah,
for you. Maybe it's just the vocals. For me, it's just because having that melody repeat, I just feel like that becomes like an earworm.
Mm-hmm.
And then after too long, it starts to become like insanity inducing.
Yeah. Like plus, it has like the ascending and descending harp, which I feel like is the nature of it is so like.
Which is an important motif for the Final Fantasy series as a whole.
Right.
So I can see why they did that.
Yeah. But I feel like in this track specifically, it almost gives it like. Uncharacteristic makes it sound negative, but like the fact it doesn't have any particular character, I feel like,
right,
you know, which is why I feel like it has a sort of ambiguous quality, but
so compositionally it does its job,
I think,
but
so
functionally
it makes me want to punch my screen in a little bit. Like I don't have any other way to say it, man. I just like,
no, it's true. They reuse it.
What did you say? You said something because you played it all over this past winter break.
I did. I played
about
it
your dad.
Winter break. Yeah, I played it at home over winter break, and I remember popping it in and you know seeing like that 3-hour wait time for it to be completely installed, and I was like, okay, fine, and I left it there because I didn't think anything of it. And after a while, I was like, this music is kind of repetitive. Which is a fair assessment because it was literally looping for 3 hours.
Right.
And my father came upstairs and was like, you're not allowed to write music like this ever. Like, you're not. I was like, well, I don't think it's a bad song, but I think if all I heard was this for 3 hours, I would also despise it with all of my being. And I did a little, which is horrible. It's even worse for him because he was down in his office like downstairs, but he leaves his door open.
Okay.
And I usually have the volume up on my TV, like a little too loud, to be honest. And so that music was probably coming out of the TV, bouncing around, and then getting carried downstairs across wooden floorways in horrible ways until the point where probably he couldn't even hear the low drone or the drums.
Yeah.
And it was just the vocals on loop. Which makes me feel very bad for him, because at least I was right in front of the TV.
I just like the idea of someone trying to get work done in their office. And even if they can't hear the track clearly, just every once in a while, they're trying to be focused, and every once in a while, then dies away again. And then 5 minutes later, it's just like, oh my gosh.
It doesn't end.
No.
It doesn't end.
Okay, so then...
Back
we talked about a title screen that
Hate's a strong word.
Yeah.
Hate's a strong word. I don't want to say I hate it, but I kind of want to say I hate it.
Yeah.
You know what? I like the track.
Continue.
This is it. I like the track, but I hate the title screen. How about that?
There we go. Yeah.
That feels fair.
Leave it there.
I never want to talk about this again.
Okay. We got it out of our system.
Just a deep breath.
But to end on a happier note, because I did want to talk about this, is okay. The title screen for Xenoblade 1,
mm-hmm.
which you recently revisited, last fall? I had you come over here and we booted it up.
Yeah.
And then you dove back in. You were only a few hours into it, but I was like,
yeah.
Have you ever watched the title
screen? And I hadn't. I
said, you have to do this. Because it was very important to me personally, because when I got into the series, I started with the first game. My friend let me borrow his copy in undergrad. And he was like, you can't start this game. I don't care what you do, but you can't start the game without listening to the title screen in its entirety.
Yeah.
And so for people who haven't played Xenoblade 1, it's just a big grassy plain with some bits of machinery stuck in the grass. And then you see the Monado stuck similarly to the AK in Uncharted 3.
I was going
to
bring it up.
Ironically. but similar to that is the Monado stuck in the ground and then a vast plain of grass and then a wide open sky mm-hmm. above. And then there's a beautiful kind of overture that plays throughout the whole of the title screen.
Right.
Probably something that most people would listen to for 5 seconds and be like, wow, that's gorgeous. Let's start the game, mm-hmm. Not think twice about it. But if you let it play out, the whole scene there has a 3-minute day night cycle
mm-hmm.
and the sun sets, it falls, night rolls in, the clouds change, and there's this beautiful moment right at the end of twilight mm-hmm. where it's about to become completely dark and the Monado starts to glow.
Right.
And you see the light kind of highlights those little bits of the sword's design and mm-hmm. all of that. And then it becomes the focal point because then you see the light glitter onto the field in front of you. And the music swells and it's just a very emotional moment.
Yeah.
And it's nothing has even happened.
Yeah.
I'm not attached to any characters yet. I didn't even know it was called the Monado yet because I hadn't played the game.
Yeah.
But then it's something that you play the game and then you come back to and it's recontextualized and it just feels good.
Right.
And it feels amazing.
Yeah.
Completely different from when you started.
Yeah. I feel like it's, in fact, just before we started recording, I brought up a similar thing about anime openings in the way that there's something about when if you already have a connection to it, but even if you don't necessarily have a connection to it already, like you just said, there's those rare moments where it can really resonate with you.
Oh, yeah.
I was really blown away when you had me sit down and watch the whole thing. I think I was maybe some 10 hours into the game or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically kind of what you alluded to. I was somebody who had played the previous games and I knew the title screens were always beautiful and they had lush tracks and usually a gorgeous setting to look at.
Yeah.
So, but the first one's different.
Mm-hmm.
The first one's different from the other games. And so, but I didn't, not knowing that, I just, I booted up and I was like, oh, that's cool. And then I start the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really blown away. I can't think of any other game that does that in that way.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know of any, but so it's...
No, because I think a lot of games too, a lot of games do this where the title screen will play for 15 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you don't touch anything, Smash Bros, for example, has a great soundtrack.
Sure.
They always have fantastic themes to go along mm-hmm. with their songs or their titles.
You go into a
montage or the opening sequence.
Well, in Smash specifically, again, they cut
or
into
a
showing,
tutorial.
Yeah, they cut into tutorials and showing characters' moves. Yeah, mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of title screens go into different things like that. But yeah, I mean, or sometimes they'll just like go dead silent and right. maybe it'll come back in later instead of just looping.
But rarely does it feel like the title screen itself was treated as like a composition.
Yeah.
Like let's use both a musical composition and like a landscape composition.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. Like, I mean, the track by Yoko Shimomura is so gorgeous in and of itself, but like, if it was just it's a few minutes long, isn't it? Like
it is, yeah.
Even if just the track was what played, it's already amazing and already hooks me in. And I feel like already anticipates the story that is about to be told to you as the player. But then visually, like you said too, it has a whole arc to it going through a day and night cycle. I remember getting chills when like the light of the Monado turns on, like there's a whole story composition to the whole thing. And that's just in the title screen. That's before you're even right. about to embark on this, like, 60 plus. And that's if you just played the game main story straight through.
Right.
Like this 60 plus hour journey you're about to go on. I just remember being really blown away by that.
It's amazing. I wish more games would do.
And to be honest, it kind of really raised my expectations for title screens in general.
Yeah, when you think about it, it really does. And I think this doesn't have to be like limited to music, I think, either.
Sure.
Xenoblade 2 does something very similar. I remember getting chills when the title screen changes.
Yes.
And I honestly forget, because it's been... After playing the game so many times, I've only seen the post-game clear title screen. So honestly, I forget what it looks like at the very beginning. But
yeah, well, I think the beginning is just... Is it just the world tree and the...
Like in fog? And then maybe you see...
I think so. I mean, I guess major spoilers. It's the ending of the game, I guess. But spoilers for the ending climax of Xenoblade 2.
Mm-hmm.
But... Yeah, and then the ending is, the fog is cleared.
The fog is cleared.
Rex with Pyra and Mithra. Who had just previously supposedly died.
And they're looking out at the ocean.
Yeah.
Fog gone at the world tree.
Yeah.
But if you wait a few seconds, I don't know if you've ever seen this, but you wait a little bit, Nia.
And the other characters come back on. Yeah.
The other character, yeah.
Is it just Nia?
I think it's just Nia.
Oh, I miss her.
I got so hyped when I saw that. It made me want to replay it immediately because I thought every time I'd replay it, I'd get another character
from
the party. And I was like, oh, I want Zeke next. I want Morag next. I want Tora to come in there.
Yeah.
I want them all to hold hands.
Yes.
Right? It literally inspired me to play it again.
Well,
it was just that small little detail.
Just about to say that I feel like... If anything, what that does, even after you've just completed this whole huge thing, is you're brought back to the beginning. You're brought back to literally where it all started. Isn't the first track on the soundtrack called like Where It All Began?
Mm-hmm.
You're brought to the very beginning of the game in a new light with a new title screen. And the characters are literally looking off into the distance as if like, what's their next adventure?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like,
whole nother adventure.
Right.
And it's confirmed with like 3 and stuff. It's like these two universes that we see running parallel. Like they develop past the events of their game.
Right.
And it's open, you know, it's this vast open feeling that I feel is like unique to, maybe I think most Japanese titles.
Yeah.
I don't think American titles really have the same kind of compositional like respect or like creativity when it comes to just, you know, maybe looking at title screen, you know, it's usually just a title card and a, you know, music, because they figure players want to get straight to the game.
Right.
You know, so it's something that's limited to like Japanese game design, you know, maybe it's certain developers have that taste, but it's very fascinating kind of tracing the coolest examples of that.
Yeah, I feel like it's probably also tied to genre too. Like, I mean, you and I both play a lot of JRPGs or just RPGs in general. Even what you mentioned with Uncharted 3, kind of like the action, or not action, but stories focused on adventure, or maybe just games that are very story heavy in general. You know, it has a component. I mean, comparing that to something like, I feel like one that's a very popular game that a lot of people know is something like the Animal Crossing New Horizons title screen.
Yeah.
Where,
yeah.
Where I feel like I could sing to that tune to somebody on the street and they would probably know what I'm singing.
And the guy in the grocery store is like, oh yeah.
He's like, is there
conga line, Animal Crossing music.
I feel like, you know, that's, I feel like a very different example where the focus isn't about, because maybe that's the whole point of, you know, what we're kind of bringing all together is that really the main point of the title screen is to anticipate the experience that you're about to have as a player, mm-hmm. right? And so talking about something like an RPG.
To anticipate it, encapsulate it, like right. you have options.
Right.
Like you can make a statement.
Yeah. Like it'd probably be a little bit weird if like the title screen to Animal Crossing New Horizons was like Tom Nook and Isabel like jumping out of the plane that the dodo birds are flying to the island and like skydiving down, yeah. like while epic music is playing.
Right.
Like, I don't think that, you know what I mean? Like, versus what it is just like, it's literally just a top down view mm-hmm. of what your current island is and just immediately, almost before you even, literally before you even get into the game, is showing you a snapshot of this is the life that you're about to yeah. step another day into, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yeah. I feel like we hit a lot of good topics there.
I think so too.
Moral of the story, do cool things with your title screens. And ask your composer to make like a whack piece and go ham.
Yeah.
Because that's the time.
Make it dynamic.
Because someone, make it dynamic. We didn't even talk about that. Mm-hmm. We'll have to save that for a different episode. But do something cool. Because someone out there is going to look at that title screen for a minute at least.
Or
maybe just for kicks. Maybe they go on their phone before they dive into your adventure.
Yeah.
You know, and then they look up and it's something different.
Yeah. You know? Or like
give them a treat.
With, I feel like with both of us, somebody's going to interact with that title screen in a way that either you didn't anticipate or you did anticipate. And it's going to stick with them forever. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, man. It's like, that's the first thing you see. That's the first impression. Good stuff.
Good stuff.
Thank you for listening. This is fun.
Thanks for having us.
See you on the next one. To you.
To me.
Ah, to me.
Ah, to me. Ah, to me.